Yesterday, Secretary of State John Husted certified that opponents of the federal health care law have enough signatures to put a constitutional amendment on the November 8 ballot. Now, Ohio voters may decide whether Ohio can opt out of the national health care overhaul. Or can they? Does a constitutional amendment in Ohio take precedence over a federal mandate? Ohio Public Radio Statehouse Bureau Chief Karen Kassler explains the title of the amendment.
The Ohio Health Care Freedom Amendment doesn't mention the federal Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. Opponents call that Obamacare, and they're primarily concerned about the requirement that individuals purchase health insurance either through their employers or through health insurance marketplaces called exchanges set up in each state.
And what are the consequences if voters choose to opt out of the federal health care overhaul? What does it mean for health care in Ohio? Later on, we're going to talk with Maurice Thompson from the Ohio Liberty Council. No, not the Ohio Liberty Council. We'll get that. He's from the 1851 Center for Constitutional Law. And also we will meet with Kathy Levine from You Can Ohio. It's a group that supports the Federal Affordable Care Act. Joining us now to get an overview of the issues and politics behind the ballot initiative is Bill Cohen, correspondent for the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau. Welcome to the show, Bill.
Thank you.
Tell us how many signatures and how close it came to getting on the ballot. Was it easy? Was it obvious? Or are there still questions about whether this will make the ballot?
I don't think there are big questions about whether it'll make the ballot. The groups opposed to this federal mandate submitted, I think it was something like 546,000 petition signatures. The Secretary of State ruled that 427,000 or so were valid. That was more than the 386,000 signatures that were needed. So there might be some challenges. I'm not aware of any major campaign to block it at the moment. But both sides are very vociferous and vehement on this. So if opponents to the ballot issue think they've got some kind of opening, some kind of way of challenging this, I'm sure they will file something. But I haven't heard anything at the moment.
Will this be a standoff on Election Day? I mean, what does this do to the dynamics at the voting booth on Election Day in November?
Well, I think that backers of this amendment figure that that this is going to bring people to the polls who are more conservative, people who don't like growing government power. So they think this just the presence on the ballot of this amendment will bring out Republicans. Of course, remember, there's also going to be this other proposal on the ballot that is an attempt to wipe out the Republican-passed collective bargaining law. And the people who want to get rid of that law figure that the presence of that issue on the ballot will bring out a lot of Democrats and liberals. So it could be a standoff in terms of the political fallout you're talking about.
And it could really raise the stakes. And when the stakes are raised, usually so is a lot of money.
Well, that's true. I think we're expecting millions and millions, perhaps tens of millions of dollars. Some of it from outside Ohio to flow in on the collective bargaining issue. I don't know that we're going to see that much money flowing in from outside on this health care issue, but there could be some. And I think there'll be perhaps millions spent from within Ohio pro and con on it. But I don't think it's going to quite have the pizzazz and the vehemence that the collective bargaining issue is going to have.
Given that it will get out more conservative voters who are going to be more likely to oppose a repeal of Senate Bill 5, might that inspire some out-of-towners to pitch in more money than usual?
Oh, I think that this is going to the collective bargaining thing is going to just going to prod money from outside of Ohio on both sides. Big money. The health care thing, I don't think is going to be that vociferous and that full of money. But it does have some national implications. You know, I don't think that this bill or this proposal itself, I don't think that people are necessarily thinking that it's going to exempt Ohioans from this purchase requirement that everybody buy health insurance. But I think when you talk to the lawyer, Maurice Thompson, he's going to tell you, at least he said in the past, what this really is just another attempt by opponents of the federal health care law to just add a little bit of political muscle, a little bit of legal muscle. They think that if enough states pass this kind of exemption, that when the U.S. Supreme Court eventually hears one of these challenges to the national health care law, there's three or four of them that are floating around, these opponents figure that the more states that pass this kind of thing, the more likely it is the U.S. Supreme Court will declare that the national health care law, or a key part of it, is unconstitutional.
But the basic take away what the topic is, what do federal mandates are, do they, I mean, what is the standing of a federal mandate over a state constitutional amendment that would oppose it?
Well, that's the big question. A lot of people will say, look, we already fought the Civil War, basically, over this issue. States cannot override the federal government. But you've got others, and Maurice Thompson will be telling you, I'm sure, that the federal constitution basically gives some powers to the federal government, and everything else is delegated to the states. And he and other opponents of the federal health care law are going to tell you this is the kind of thing, this is just the kind of thing that should be delegated to the states. Most people do believe that the government that's lower level, the state government, is more responsive to people than the federal government, and local government is even more responsive to people than the state government. So you've got a lot of people who say, we don't like big federal mandates.
My guest is Bill Cohen, State House news reporter for the Ohio Public Radio. If you have a question or comment for Bill, we're talking about the health care reform law and efforts in Ohio to put an initiative on the ballot that would allow the state of Ohio to opt out of that mandate. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Tell the screener if you're for or against mandate, and or if you want to put it in other terms, if you're for or against the ballot initiative. You can also go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page and post your question or comment there. Bill, the governor has said that Ohio has accepted the federal money to build the health insurance exchange that's called for in the new health care law. The governor also says that he supports the provisions in the health care overhaul that calls for managed care for Medicare and Medicaid recipients. He says those are good ideas. Does that take a little wind out of the sails of folks who oppose the mandate overall?
I'd say just a little bit, just a little bit. But I think you'd have to say that John Kasich doesn't like this federal health care mandate. He doesn't like big federal power. So even though he may have declared himself on that one smaller issue, I don't think it takes away a lot from the thrust of conservatives who say, look, we don't like big federal power. I just wanted to comment on something you just said. Mm-hmm. You were asking the listeners, how do they feel about the mandate? And then how do they feel about the ballot issue?
Opting out of the mandate, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And you'd think that that would track pretty closely, that those would be directly linked. But a recent Quinnipiac poll, and that's an independent poll. This is a university that doesn't apparently have any axe to grind, and their polls are well respected. They did a poll a couple weeks ago, and they found that by more than a 2-to-1 margin, a good sample of Ohio voters said they didn't like the federal mandate. I think it was something like 66 to 27, more than a 2-to-1 margin. And yet when then 10 seconds later, the same folks were asked, well, then do you support the ballot issue in Ohio to exempt people from that federal mandate? Instead of a 2-to-1 margin saying, yes, of course we support it. We just told you we don't like the mandate. Mm-hmm. Instead of that, it was a virtual 50-50 split. I think it was 48% saying they favored the ballot issue, 45% against the ballot issue. And the pollsters didn't ask any more questions, so we don't really know why there's that disconnect. But I thought it was very fascinating that people would overwhelmingly say they don't like the mandate, and then 10 seconds later, they didn't take advantage of the idea that, well, in some way Ohio could try to at least send the message that it wanted to exempt itself from the mandate.
Do you think that there's any benefit to the fact, a benefit for supporters of the health care reform, that a lot of the provisions of the law have already gone into effect, and a lot of those provisions affect everyday people that, you know, it may be somebody, yeah, I oppose the federal mandate, but by the way, my kid now is insured, even though they weren't before because they had a pre-existing condition.
Well, that's a good point, and that's the point I'm sure Kathy Levine will be making later, that yes, people, I think she'll admit that this idea of the mandate isn't all that popular, but when people are told about the other provisions that the mandate helps make possible, then they say, oh, I like that provision that my kid can stay on my insurance longer. Oh, I like the provision that says... people with pre-existing medical conditions cannot be turned down for insurance like they have been in the past. And I think that is going to be their big selling point. Hey, folks, look past the mandate that you generally don't like and look at all the things in here that you probably do like. Although I'm not sure that all those have really taken effect yet. I mean, I think the thing about adult children staying on adults' insurance, mm-hmm. Their parents' insurance longer, I think that has taken effect. Mm-hmm. But other parts, I don't think have, and I think that's the dilemma that supporters of the federal law are facing. It's hard for them to show all the positive aspects in their eyes because some of those haven't taken effect yet.
Right. Not everything has, but some have. If you have a question or comment coming up, we'll have Kathy Levine from the director of UCAN Ohio. She'll be with us to talk about why she supports the health care reform. If you have a question or comment about it, she can probably answer that about what's gone into effect right now. Dan from Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, who's this?
Yep, Dan, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Okay, good. I just cut into the listening where you were talking about the positive benefits, so I want to say in favor because I think there are a lot. And frankly, I'm switching healthcare providers right now, so I'm very appreciative of the fact that there are no pre-existing condition clauses anymore. However, the question, maybe the idea that I have also, is that because Ohio is essentially a state that where workers have better wages than other states and things like that, doesn't the health care law, by creating more or less a level playing field across the nation, give Ohio at least an economic advantage over other states, that or at least levels the playing field more for those other states, like particularly southern states, which traditionally provide less wages and less benefits to their employees.
Now, Bill, the lieutenant governor has said that she opposes it. Mary Taylor, that she opposes it because she thinks it'll put Ohio at a disadvantage and it will affect its already good insurance rates.
Yeah, is the caller saying, hinting here that that in other words, Ohio already has a good system, and therefore we're going to be giving more than we're getting? Is that your point?
I think back, I used to sit on a local government council, and it seemed like local governments all the time, to compete for business, were giving away tax abatements. You know, you'd have to compete with Groveport or Columbus or whatever to give the best tax abatement you could to a business to get them to come into your community. The same thing is true, I think, has always been true with states in terms of businesses in the South being able to provide a lower wage environment, for example, to get businesses to go down there, mm-hmm. As opposed to up here. So by taking essentially health care out of the equation in terms of economic competition, doesn't that give Ohio a better relative competitive advantage to other states? That's, I guess, my thought.
Okay.
I hope that makes some sense.
I see what you're talking about.
Well, go ahead, Ann, talk about that because I can't.
Well,
I guess, Dan, what
you're saying is, if it makes all the states equal or similar, then that is not an issue when businesses that are bringing jobs have to consider when they go to a state. They're not going to worry about whether or not health care is provided for. Thanks a lot, Dan, for that call. We have to take a break right now, and when we return, we'll continue our conversation. I want to say thanks to Bill Cohen from the State House News Bureau of Ohio Public Radio for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bill. Coming up, Kathy Levine from UCAN, Ohio. It's a consumer advocacy organization. And also Maurice Thompson. He's director of the 1851 Center for Constitutional Law. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Start your day with local updates from the award-winning WOSU News team.
James O'Keefe, the conservative activist, targeted the Franklin County Opportunity Center where people can apply for Medicaid benefits.
Maybe I just wouldn't mention it. You didn't hear that from me?
Right.
Ohio Department of Job and Family Services spokesman Ben Johnson calls the video very troubling.
These county employees should certainly not be giving...
Hear the latest in local and national news on Morning Edition on 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR News station.
And you can get access to 89.7 NPR News anytime online at WOSU.org. Hear local and national news all day, every day, from the convenience of your computer by streaming on the web. Listen to 89.7 NPR News anytime online at WOSU.org. 77 degrees in downtown Columbus, sunshine and warming up to a high of 89 today. Partly cloudy tonight, a low of 69. Mostly sunny for Thursday, a high of 92. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
We're talking about the initiative that so far is going to be on the November ballot that would let the state opt out of the national health care overhaul. Joining us now is Kathy Levine. She's executive director of UCAN Ohio. It's a consumer advocacy organization that promotes quality, affordable health care for all Ohioans. Welcome to the show, Kathy.
Thanks for having me, Ann.
Also with us is Maurice Thompson. He's director of the 1851 Center for Constitutional Law. It's a nonprofit, nonpartisan legal center dedicated to protecting the constitutional right of Ohioans from government abuse. Welcome to the show, Maurice.
It's nice to be with you.
If you want to talk about the initiative that's going to be on the ballot in November that would allow the state to opt out of the National Health Care Reform Act, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And make sure you tell our screener if you're for or against repealing or allowing the state to opt out of the National Health Care Reform Act. Why don't we just talk about what the initiative on the ballot would do? There's a lot of points to it, Maurice, and I want to make sure folks understand it's not just Ohio opts out. Oh, were it that simple?
Yeah, yeah, and I appreciate that question because that's essentially true. You know, a lot of the early media reports are simply saying this will allow Ohio to opt out of Obamacare and then don't talk about some of the other things that the measure does, or some of its effects on state and local government that are really important to us, in fact, are one of the main reasons that we drafted this. You know, it's certainly true that the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, and particularly its minimum essential coverage requirement, are what spurred interest in this issue for the proponents of the measure. But it's equally true that they're disturbed by what's generally called Romney Care, which is the Massachusetts state version of essentially the Patient Protection Affordable Care Act that also has an individual mandate. And these people didn't want Ohio to go down the same road as Massachusetts, where health insurance costs have spiraled out of control higher than any other place in the country since the individual mandate was conceived in 2006, and premiums, health insurance premiums, are the highest of any state in the country.
Okay, well, let's get back to what would be on the ballot in November.
Sure. Okay. So those are the two of the motivations. The measure would add a 21st section to Ohio's Bill of Rights in the Ohio Constitution, and the key provision that people talk the most about states, in Ohio, no law or rule shall compel directly or indirectly any person, employer, or health care provider to participate in a health care system. But the measure also prohibits the state or local or federal government from prohibiting the purchase or sale of health care or health insurance, and prohibits the imposition of a penalty on people who are merely trying to privately sell health care and health care insurance in Ohio.
The opponents of it say right off the bat, the ballot measure, the initiative has zero legal standing. That you can vote for it all you want, but at the end of the day, it's going to be usurped by the federal mandate.
Well, that's true. The opponents are starting to change their tune a little bit. Yesterday, Progress Ohio actually indicated that our ballot measure would kill people, so they're starting to slightly alter their messaging. But that was their initial messaging, is that this would be ineffectual were it to be passed anyway, and that's completely false. They argue this under the Supremacy Clause. The first point is that this is completely effective against state and local government, irrespective of what may happen at the federal level. So this goes a long way towards making Ohio a sanctuary for healthcare freedom, irrespective of what it does with the federal level. And I'm going to call it Obamacare. I don't mean that derisively. I think that's just normal nomenclature at this point. As against Obamacare, the first thing to remember when we're talking about the mandate is that the Supremacy Clause only applies when the federal government's actually acting within its express powers under the Constitution. So our first argument is, of course, that it's not here. That will be determined by ongoing litigation. But what this particular measure adds to the equation is, if you could think of it this way, a second hump to a camel. This is a two-hump camel instead of one. And what I mean by that is this current litigation is all over what power does the government have. Can they do this to you under the Commerce Clause? What we're adding is a right. So even if the government has a power, you can still have a right. For example, the Commerce Clause may allow the regulation of flag burning, but you may then have a First Amendment right, even so, to go ahead and burn a flag. What we're trying to do here is create a fundamental right under the Fifth and Fourteenth Amendments that respect the fact that states are the primary repositories of the freedom of the people. And so under the Fifth and Fourteenth and Ninth and Tenth Amendments, we're trying to incorporate a fundamental right that we can then use under substantive due process to create a second tier of challenges.
Okay.
And yeah, I know this is good. Also, it's less proper, you know, under the Necessary and Proper Clause if states are doing something. So that was kind of what Bill Cohen referred to at the beginning.
Okay. Kathy Levine, there is two parts to this. There's opting out or, you know, for lack of a better word or phrase, of the federal mandate, but it's also keeping anything like that from taking effect in Ohio in any way, any kind of healthcare reform.
And this whole conversation is a distraction from what people really want out of healthcare. You know, the Affordable Care Act is going to give families freedom from the constant worry that they will not be able to get health care when they need it. People with pre-existing conditions, and that can be anything from, you know, metastatic cancer to having had acne in high school. People with pre-existing conditions are denied insurance coverage today in Ohio if they don't have employer-based coverage. We've got 1.5 million uninsured people, including all the people who lost their jobs and with it lost their health care and can't get affordable health care. So when we're talking about freedom and the right to opt out of health care, how many people really want to opt out of health care?
Well, we were talking earlier, Bill Cohen and I, about the governor saying that he supports the health insurance exchange, for example, and that they've taken the federal money for that. Ostensibly, are you concerned at all that that kind of support from the federal government would be taken away if Ohio passed this kind of initiative?
I think it's of concern that this initiative, if passed, will give momentum to opponents of the whole Affordable Care Act. The opponents are singling out the individual mandate because, frankly, it's unpopular on its face to say you're going to be forced to do anything. And keep in mind, this individual mandate is an individual responsibility requirement. If we're going to provide people with pre-existing conditions access to the insurance market, the insurance industry and health economists say we need everybody participating. Without the mandate, people who can afford to buy coverage can choose to go without coverage and buy coverage on the way to the hospital. I mean, today, one of the reasons health coverage is so expensive is that hospitals are providing so much uncompensated care, which is passed on to those of us who buy insurance in the form of higher premiums.
Abe in Worthington, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. You oppose the initiative that would get Ohio out of the federal law.
Yeah, actually, the previous speaker put pretty well what I think. What I actually think, if people want to opt out, that's fine, except that I don't want to see them at the emergency room when they get sick and where we have to pay for it. And what will happen is basically that the younger people who are healthier than the older population will go without the insurance until they start having children. And then they will pick it up, and it will cost us, all of us, much more. And this is the kind of thing that either we're in the boat together or we are in separate boats and we sink together. Furthermore, I am not sure about the statistic that was mentioned about the premiums in Massachusetts skyrocketing. Because I have friends in Massachusetts, and I asked the question, and they said no, that the premiums were not particularly higher. So I think this is a bad issue for Ohio, and it has nothing to do with freedom. It really has to do to whether we have our freedom depends on each other, and we are no longer a society that can go out in the woods and hunt and all those things. We're too interdependent. We are paying for each other all the time, and we don't live in that world, the world the Constitution was written in. So that's my fit take.
All right. Thank you for the call, Abe. Maurice Thompson of 1851 Center, we're already paying for each other. But some of us are paying more than others because they're not insured, because a lot of people choose not to be insured, which is their choice right now. But we're still paying for it, the people who are insured. What about that? Because there is an economic issue here as well.
Well, yeah, thanks for the question. And both the caller, Kathy, and your question kind of hits upon two important points. And we've got to go back to our fundamental first principles, where sometimes we diverge at that point, and then all of the other stuff is just heaped on top of that. So there's a moral opposition to the mandate. There's a utilitarian opposition. You know, Kathy spoke of a freedom from worry. We don't believe in a freedom from worry. We believe that government exists to secure rights only, not to redistribute things and to make society nice. So this, in the first instance, is fundamentally a disagreement about the proper role of government. We believe in a limited government, particularly federal government, with powers that are, as Madison said, few and defined, and we don't accept the idea that those principles should change over time just because society changes in certain ways. You know, so our moral precipice is that government should interfere with your life as little as possible, and that collectivism, this we're all in this together approach, doesn't justify taking things from taking money out of the pocket of a mechanic in Sandusky to pay for the acne treatment of a child in Cincinnati.
But they're already taking money out of the pocket of
right.
people who pay higher insurance rates when they treat people at the hospital who are uninsured. And, of course, the hospitals, you know, have indigent bills that are skyrocketing as well.
Well, but that's really not a fair characterization of the story, because socialism can't justify more socialism. You know, we passed EMTALA in the early 80s and required hospitals to cover people. And now we're complaining because when they do so, they don't get compensated. In the second instance, what you have to know is that Medicare and Medicaid undercompensate hospitals. They only pay 80% of the costs of the hospitals for treating that. So the more people that are on Medicare and Medicaid, the more the hospitals have to recover that cost on the back of people that have private insurance. So if you want private insurance to be more affordable, what you don't want is more people using Medicare and Medicaid. But that's exactly what Obamacare does, is pushes more people into government payment systems.
Kathy Levine.
So, Maurice, it sounds like you want to abolish Medicare, abolish Medicaid. Medicaid pays for half of all nursing homes in Ohio now and a third of childbirths. You want to do away with Medicare as we know it. Do you also want to do away with firefighters? I mean, you know, most of us in society believe that government does have a role in providing, in organizing services that are very hard to get on the individual market. Now, the Affordable Care Act is not talking about creating more public health care, except to expand Medicaid to people with very low incomes who are not eligible. But what it's doing, you know, and the individual mandate is part of the effort to make the private market, the private insurance market, work better for people who don't have employer-based coverage and make it work better for small businesses. Today, half of small businesses, fewer than half of small businesses in Ohio, can't afford to offer coverage. By the creation of the health exchange, which, you know, of which the mandate is a part, is creating an organized marketplace, a Travelocity, to make it easier for people to compare insurance plans and, you know, compare products and get access to group coverage instead of being out on your own. Small employers will have the advantages of large employers financially. So this is just organizing the marketplace.
Is that government's role, though?
When you have health care, which in this country we believe is somewhat of a right to people. I mean, as a society, I think we do believe that we're not going to let people die in the streets. And that's why he mentioned EMTALA. For people who don't know what that is, that's the law that requires hospital emergency rooms to stabilize people. So if you show up, they don't look at your insurance card before they treat you enough to keep you from dying. They may transfer you, you know, after you're stabilized. But that's a societal view, that we don't want people dying in the streets. And the Affordable Care Act is a government solution to something that's really broken. I mean, I don't think many people want to abolish Medicare. Medicare was created because people over 65 didn't have access to affordable health care, couldn't pay for health care. Now we're talking about working people. What are we going to do for working families? What are we going to do for the rest of the society? And this isn't expanding Medicare for all. This is government solving problems that people can't solve on their own.
And Maurice, you say that's not the role of government.
Well, not at all. We believe in freedom of choice. We believe, you know, Kathy said something as we as a society believe. Well, if we as a society believe in Christianity mostly, that doesn't mean we should force others to believe in Christianity. You know, if we believe that people should have health insurance, that doesn't mean we should arrogantly try to socially engineer society and force our views upon other people.
Do you think that people have a right? Do you think that health care and health, being healthy, and the pursuit of that is a right, is a right or not, or a privilege?
Or is the right not to die a right?
Another way to put it. How do you see in the moral matrix, where does health care fit in our society?
Well, what the proponents of the Ohio Healthcare Freedom Amendment believe is that you have the right to do anything that doesn't harm another person. But what this does is takes money out of the pockets of some people, gives it to others. I mean, this is corporatism. This is taking money away from hardworking people and giving it to insurance corporations. This is the parable of the Baptist and the bootlegger to the nth degree. People like Ms. Levine say, oh, we want people to be covered. And then they're secretly being, you know, the money that's pushing for this is coming from the insurance companies, who say, oh, wouldn't it be great if everybody was forced to buy our product?
Well, if it's coming from the insurance companies, it couldn't be farther from. You're saying it's socialism. You're saying corporatization of government, then.
Yeah, I would say it's more like corporatism. And this has been the story of the past few years, big business forcing people to buy their products. And, of course, what happens is the product becomes more expensive. Everywhere you have a minimum essential coverage requirement, the results are foreseeable.
We're checking on the Massachusetts assertion that you made earlier.
No, that's fine.
I'd like to address it. Massachusetts has long had among the highest health care costs in the country. It has to do with, you know, the standard of living there is way higher than most places in the country. It's for many reasons. It's had well before the
before
Massachusetts law reform, health reform. And when the Affordable Care Act, insurance premiums started going up, and people wondered whether that was caused by health reform, but they forgot. They didn't start going up with the passage of the Affordable Health Care Act. Health care premiums have been soaring for many years before it. And the Affordable Care Act is going to do a lot of things to bring down health care costs besides coverage.
We're going to come back to this after this break. And we'll also get to those phone calls, in case you're wondering. And we have some emails as well. So if you want to call us, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And this is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Supporting 89.7 NPR News is easier than ever when you become a sustaining member. Sign up online at wosu.org/sustainer. As a sustaining member, your donation is automatic, monthly, and ongoing. No more letters in the mail, and your WOSU member card will renew automatically. Every year, we'll confirm your membership, and you can cancel at any time. For as little as $5 per month, you'll be supporting the programs you love. Become a sustaining member now at wosu.org/sustainer.
And this is 89.7 NPR News. In 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, hour two of All Signs begins. Legislators are the faces of various bills and amendments. But who's really behind the pen that writes the legislation? That discussion at 11 on All Sides with Ann Fisher.
Support for 89.7 comes from the Columbus Symphony, performing with the Ohio State Marching Band for the final weekend of this summer's Picnic with the Pops, topped off with fireworks Friday, July 29th and Saturday the 30th on the lawn of Chemical Abstract Service. PicnicWithThePops.com.
77 degrees in downtown Columbus, warming up to a high of 89 today with sunny skies. Partly cloudy tonight and cooling off to an overnight low of 69 degrees. Sunny skies for Thursday and a little warmer with a high of 92. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is 89.7 NPR News. Thanks for joining us.
Welcome back. We're talking about the Affordable Health Care Act, the federal health care reform law. Whatever you want to call it, it goes by many names. If you support it, that means that you would vote for an initiative. You would vote against an initiative that'll be on the ballot in November. If you oppose federal health care reform, you will vote for an initiative that made it on the ballot yesterday. You'll be able to vote for it in November. So give us a call, and when you do, tell the screener whether you're for it or against it. And our last caller was opposed to health care reform, supported health care reform. David from Cleveland, you oppose the health care reform. That means you'll vote for the initiative. Welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Did I make that all? Is that all clear as mud?
I'm not sure really much what much is clear here, and I think that's part of the problem.
Okay.
When I was teaching, before I was became unemployed, some of this seemed much more clear-cut. I have epilepsy, which requires constant care. And now that I'm no longer employed, in fact, when that transition occurred, people said, oh, just go on COBRA coverage, as if that were a magic wand. And then I found out how much COBRA coverage costs. And now I've even had less than that to deal with. So the idea of forcing everyone or mandating everyone to pay for a certain amount of health care is something that, I mean, I wish I were in a position to do right now. I simply am not.
So how do you pay for it?
Well, I don't.
Tell us your secret.
I have piles and piles of paperwork from a couple ER visits, and every time there's an ER visit, it results in tons of more paperwork, and it's certainly not easy. It's not what I would have preferred.
But what's the paperwork for? To get somebody else to pay for it?
Well, this might have been covered under the Entala principle or the hospitals that do have provisions to help pay for those under the poverty line. It's certainly not easy. I've had to unfortunately result to that. I've had no other choice. So it's months of paperwork going through things, going through submitting all this all as much information as possible, and it's a headache, and it certainly doesn't help the opportunities. I mean, really, I've got other things I'm trying to do. I'm trying to find full-time employment. But this is really becoming a mountain of paperwork that it becomes really hard to get out from underneath.
So how would health care reform help someone like David, who has epilepsy and is uninsured and is getting buried in paperwork? Someone's got to be paying for it.
The requirement that starts in 2014 that everybody have health care has exceptions. People who cannot afford to have health care will not be fined for not having health care. But more importantly than that, subsidies will be available for people like David. If he really has no income, he'll be eligible for Medicaid, which is public coverage, because people with low incomes really can't afford to contribute to health coverage. But if he does have some income above what they, you know, above around $14,000 a year for an individual, then he would go to the exchange and he would get a subsidy to help him pay for coverage.
Kind of like a voucher,
yeah,
sort of a.
Well, it'll be a tax subsidy.
Okay.
But it'll be upfront so that he will not have to pay. He will get a lot of help to pay. And the subsidy is designed to protect people from paying a certain percentage of their income. And if he can't find coverage that, you know, that he can afford under the law, then he would have an exemption from the requirement. But it's designed to help people like David. He's a prime example of who this exchange is going to help.
Thanks, David, for that call. Maurice, what about someone like David? Now, let's just say hypothetically, he can't go to the hospital because he's uninsured and the hospitals won't, you know, in another parallel universe, the hospitals wouldn't treat him. Instead of treating him and putting it on their indigent rolls and then getting it reimbursed somehow, somewhere, usually by people who can't afford to pay for health insurance.
You know, we live in a world where people with low income can afford all kinds of things that are just remarkable. Cell phones, iPods, and what's the difference between cell phones and iPods on the one hand and healthcare on the other? The difference is that government has been so extravagantly involved for so long now. We're not allowed to sell insurance across state lines. Medical licensure laws drive up the costs. Mandates in Ohio, there are almost 40 drive up the costs of medical treatment. You know, David could get a bare bones catastrophe plan, which is really what people need at minimum, you know, if costs were cheaper. And costs would be cheaper if government wasn't involved and if people like David who wanted to buy private insurance weren't having to subsidize a lot of the government treatment that under-reimburses so extravagantly. So step one is to go back to a series of free market reforms. It's not as though we don't have solutions. It's just that we have to unwind this ball of yarn that we have here instead of making it worse. Obamacare makes it worse, and the Ohio Healthcare Freedom Amendment helps to at least begin the unwinding of this ball of yarn.
Kathy Levine?
Well, first of all, I just want to say to David that if you call UCAN Ohio, we have a helpline and we'll help you sort out your hospital bills and see if we can link you up with some affordable resources. But I was shaking my head because the reason we passed the Affordable Care Act and the reason that there was bipartisan support for doing something about health care reform is that the unregulated free market has been a disaster. We have the highest health care costs per capita in the world, and yet we have, you know, 48 million people uninsured. We have people even people with insurance. Two-thirds of the people who file for medical bankruptcy have insurance. So our system is not working for people now. And a catastrophic plan is exactly what people like David don't need. He needs primary care. He needs access, you know, to affordable primary care based on his ability to pay. That if we invest more in prevention, we will save money. We're spending huge amounts of money today on treating people with chronic conditions whose chronic conditions could be managed better and cheaper in primary care than in emergency rooms and hospitals.
Bob in Columbus, you're welcome to the show. You oppose the initiative. You support health care reform.
That is correct. Real quick, I have a couple of comments for the gentleman. One, he keeps calling it Obamacare. The president isn't part of the legislation or the legislative branch. He can't enter legislation in. So he signed it, yes, and he had a little input. But again, he didn't vote on it. So Obamacare is a little misleading.
No.
The other thing already brought about by Abe, for many years, the conservative side of the voting bloc has been complaining about how they're paying for health care costs for those who go to the emergency room because they don't have any health insurance. And everybody who does seems to be picking up the tab. So it seems to be a little inconsistent to what they've been doing in the past. But I think one thing that needs to be taken into consideration is this initiative, just like the Senate Bill 5 initiative, are coming out during a very low turnout election, just like 2010. Governor Kasich said he had a mandate, and from the people who voted, he probably did. But when you look at the turnout, you got a lot of people in the central city who didn't get out to vote in 2010 and could not vote in this election, which initiative folks to take advantage of.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's real important, those of us who are on poverty. My annual income is only $11,000 a year. I'm scrambling just to eat. I can only go to a food bank once a month. So for me to be able to afford health insurance without help is impossible.
Thank you, Bob, for that call. We appreciate it. Maurice, do you want to respond to what Bob had to say?
I'll respond to some of what Bob had to say. I think that there are two different kinds of way that the government can control society and regulate. One is through pervasive regulation of everyone, and one is through a minimum social safety net, which we find less offensive. You know, for people like Bob who are at $11,000 a year or less, some minor redistribution of wealth to help them out and make sure that they're okay isn't nearly as offensive to us as the notion of requiring everybody merely because they exist to purchase health care or to purchase whatever's next, a health club membership, an automobile from General Motors, or a particular kind of home.
So it's a slippery slope.
Well, it's absolutely a slippery slope because they're all philosophically equivalent. You know, the other side says, well, healthcare is different because everybody will use it. Well, you know what? Everybody goes to work for the most part one way or another. Why don't we force them to buy a car? Everybody has to have shelter in one way or another. Why not a three-bedroom ranch house? You know, this is fundamentally about the extent to which government can control your life. And I have to respond to something that Ms. Levine said before the caller, which is that this is the free market and it hasn't worked. This is a market that has been pervasively regulated and interfered with by government, both at the state and federal levels, for a heck of a long time. And that's why healthcare costs have spiraled out of control, as opposed to consumer electronics or less regulated markets.
Kathy Levine? UConn, Ohio?
Where to begin? First of all, he keeps talking about forcing people to buy health insurance. We're talking, you know, most people in America have health coverage. Do you have health coverage?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, most people in America do. And most of the people who don't have health coverage want it but can't afford it. We are talking about a radical fringe who wants to volunteer to not have health coverage even though they can afford it. Most people, most of us, I have employer-based coverage. I'm very lucky to have employer-based coverage. Mm-hmm. The people who don't have coverage are mostly people who have their own businesses, and the individual market is not working for people, the non-group market. People in small businesses, because small businesses are very disadvantaged today. The Affordable Care Act gives tax credits to small businesses so they can afford to offer coverage, and then will give them the option of sending their employees to the exchange. But it's individuals and small businesses. They're not deciding they want to go without health coverage. They can't afford it. And this whole thing is about making health coverage more affordable. Now, in terms of, I just want to say, in terms of the ballot initiative, at the top of the hour, Bill Cohen said it's going on the ballot. This thing is far from being on the ballot. The opponents of the law are the opponents of the ballot initiative are reviewing petitions as we speak, and they are finding serious legal flaws in the petitions and will be challenging some of the petitions, some of the signatures. You know, the law has requirements, and the law was not followed by many circulators. Example, if you look through a petition and a husband signs and then signs for his wife.
That's garden variety.
Effort in Ohio history. Yeah.
We'll see.
I think that for you to attack our circulators is really absurd.
Whenever an initiative gets on the ballot, the opponents of the initiative criticize the
we have lawyers reviewing it. We have lawyers reviewing it, and the errors we're looking for are the errors that have been established by court decisions.
Secretary of State John Huston said yesterday it could still there's room for an appeal. There's room to challenge it, and that'll go forward.
We won't know till September whether it'll be on the ballot.
We'll know. It's going to be on the ballot, and the Obama administration and their fundraisers are sending a lot of money to nonprofits like Ms. Levine's here in Ohio. What they do is use something like this
money from the Obama
to raise money, and they keep half of it, use half to attack us and fund their general operations. We understand the game that's played here.
You know, my organization spends no money attacking you
who
or trying to
funds
protect the Affordable Care Act.
The initiative that's going on the ballot, who is funding that? Who will, you know, foot the bill as the debate goes forward to November?
It remains to be seen. What we know is that in other states where this has happened, Oklahoma, Arizona, Missouri, oftentimes the proponents of the measure are successful in passing it without spending hardly any money at all because people so vociferously oppose minimum essential coverage requirements and favor health care freedom. And opponents tend to be hospital associations that stand to gain from increased revenue and insurance companies. Insurance companies have been the biggest spenders against this. You know, in favor of this, it remains to be seen. It's going to be individuals.
Virtually every consumer organization. My organization is an organization founded by consumers to build a voice of consumers in healthcare reform because insurance companies, hospitals, providers, all the moneyed interests in healthcare have a lot of interest at the table. We're the consumer voice, but consumer organizations across the country view the Affordable Care Act as a sound step forward. It's got flaws that need to be changed, but it's progress toward affordable
healthcare. We're the voice of taxpayers, and taxpayers oppose this.
Well, we're taxpayers too.
Two opposing voices. I thank you for joining us, Kathy Levine, Executive Director of UCAN Ohio, Consumer Advocacy Organization for Affordable Healthcare for All Ohioans. Kathy, thanks for being here today.
Thank you for having us, Ann.
Also, Maurice Thompson, Director of 1851 Center for Constitutional Law, nonprofit, nonpartisan legal center dedicated to protecting the constitutional right of Ohioans. Maurice, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.